Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening to you all. This is the Business Day Spotlight, your destination for African business made simple. My name is Mulio Gavaza, and for today, we get into a conversation, around the growth of e-commerce in South Africa, and we're just going to be understanding some of the trends, some of the growth drivers in that particular sector, maybe getting an understanding of some of the components that make up e-commerce in the country, online retail versus e-commerce, and also understanding, what's making people buy online, have we retreated and just gone back to, shopping in person? They say that South Africa is a country that has a very strong mall culture. How much of that stuff, is driving up or down the adoption of e-commerce in South Africa? To help us, down this path and to make sense of what's going on in the landscape, we are joined by someone that I consider to be a veteran, in the industry. That is Andy Higgins. He is the managing director over at Bob Group. Andy, greetings to you today.
Greetings. Thank you very much for having me.
Now, Andy, the reason why I consider you to be a veteran of the industry is that you are responsible for probably one of the early incarnations, of what people considered to be e-commerce back in the day, which was Bid or Buy. Maybe that's where I will start before we shine a light on Bob Group, to say, how does 2024 compared to, the time that, Bid or Buy came about? Whatever you were solving for back in those days, have those conditions been solved for, or do you still see the same conditions, prevailing to this day?
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, when we launched Bid or Buy, it was back August 1999, so it's 25 years ago. And I would say we pretty much are solving for the same problem to this day. Obviously, a lot has evolved and changed since then. But to some degree, I almost see it as coming full circle. One of the big differences, I think, just high level in the e-commerce landscape is generally with, the advent of marketplaces and so on, is the likes of Takealot and Amazon and Makro now in South Africa, they tend to offer a structured catalog, what we would call a structured catalog, whereas with Bid or Buy, which has now evolved into Bob Shop, that is still, in essence, what it was when it started, which is a less structured catalog. And it's also, from a logistics point of view, what we'd call a decentralized logistics solution. So we don't have big warehouses where we're holding stock and catalog that stock in a very structured way like you find on some of the other marketplaces now. But otherwise, it's about providing value. People shop online, I think, still for three main reasons, and that's predominantly price, and then it's convenience, and then also choice and variety. And I think that has kind of stood the test of time. That's still the reason why people shop online.
One of the things I was most curious about is, now that we have sort of a baseline of the year 1999, I would at least expect that it's a different world that we exist in. Firstly, just from an education point of view, people, you don't necessarily have to tell people what online shopping is, and telling people what a browser is, what an online marketplace is. All of those things are sort of well within people's common knowledge on a day-to-day. And then I think the other thing is internet connectivity. Usage of the internet, people's ability to pay for things online, all of those things, which is why it's quite interesting to me that someone like you can say that a lot of the things that you're trying to solve for back in 1999 are still things that, you're trying to solve for right now in 2024.
And for sure, we've come a long way. I think we forget back in 1999, in fact, up until mid-2000s, we were still connecting to the internet. Most South Africans at home were connecting to the internet through dial-up. So you're having to pay Telkom per minute to be online. And I mean, that's so foreign today, right? You just wouldn't even think, like, you can't believe that we used to have to do that. So a lot has changed. I'd say payments also has come a long way. It's definitely more ubiquitous. People are able to pay one way or another online, even if they don't have cards. There are other ways people are able to pay, even if it's via EFT or other means. I would argue, however, that the one aspect of e-commerce that is still evolving, that we're not quite there yet, and I would also argue that it's the most crucial part of the whole process, and that's the logistics side. So I think specifically in South Africa, even if you look at the broader markets, so people living in outlying areas, people living in townships, it's still one of the nuances we have is that you generally would pay a premium, like a surcharge, to have something delivered to a township, for example, today in South Africa. And so I still think there's, when that barrier gets reduced, and I believe we're on the way to getting there, I do think that that's still going to have a big impact on adoption of e-commerce in South Africa. I mean, we're still at roughly, let's say, 5% of total retail, and we're still far behind our other emerging market counterparts, even like India and Brazil and other countries like that. So, yes, connectivity has come a long way. Payments has come a long way. I think logistics has definitely improved to some extent. You could also argue that we've gone backwards with the likes of the post office. When we launched Bidobaya back in 1999, the main way to have something delivered was via the post office. I remember it costing somewhere around 10 to 15 rand to have something delivered back then. Now most people would not feel comfortable sending something through the post office, for example. So yeah, private sector has had to step in there. But I think we still got some way to go to make sort of logistics side, the delivery part, ubiquitous across all South Africans.
Now, when it comes to the logistics piece, Andy, one of the key aspects that you've just highlighted is that logistics piece, which is tied together with the distribution. You know, one could say that you're talking literally, you know, two sides of the same coin, right? And there's been a lot of different, I guess, evolutions that the space has taken. But curious to pick your brain on two fronts. First, the one that you spoke about just now, which is the post office. One of the things that I tend to look at is ICT policy. And, you know, there's been a lot of policies that say, you know, perhaps that the post office could be evolved into becoming more of a logistics or fulfillment, you know, type of operation for, you know, e-commerce fulfillment and that type of thing. Is that in the realm of, I won't say in the realm of possibility because anything is possible, but given the fact that it was a mainstay back in the day, but now private sector players have taken over, could it realistically reclaim that space again?
Well, you're speaking to something which I'm very passionate about. I definitely believe it's possible. If you look at other more mature markets, e-commerce has evolved to make up a third of the business of a post office in many countries. And obviously that's not the case for us now, but I really do believe it is possible. And I one of my personal passion projects would be to hopefully form some kind of a public-private partnership with the post office and to solve that problem together. So one of the areas we are working on, which I'm very excited about, is a smart parcel locker solution, which we call Bob Box. And internationally in some countries, as much as 80% of e-commerce deliveries are delivered to a smart parcel locker. And so I think there's a lot of opportunity for something like that in South Africa. And I think it's well within the realms of possibilities, especially if, and the Department of Communication has indicated that they are open to looking at public, private type partnerships. And we would definitely love to be at the forefront of something like that.
And, you know, maybe specifically on that, I've actually seen quite a number of players that are now, we have a number of different brands and companies that are offering, you know, lockers of some sort. Now, we could get into debates about, you know, how smart, you know, each of these different types of lockers are. But lockers as a concept, where something is sent to you, you get a PIN or a password, you go there, you enter your PIN, and then you're able to collect a particular, you know, parcel or good, you know, seems to be something that's at least quite understood in cities. And I'm sure it's become quite a bit of a nice solution in outlying areas, right? From what you can see in terms of maybe pushing up rates of, you know, online retail, or especially online retail, is there anything that needs to be done in that space? Because you're excited about that space, which means you're probably, there's some type of innovation you're working on that, you know, you're hoping helps you guys to stand out, especially because it's such a competitive market.
Yes. No, look, I think we're still, again, South Africa, I believe we are lagging compared to other countries, but that's great because we can learn what's worked in other countries and to some extent leapfrog, you know, development in that regard. So, I mean, we're quite ambitious in this space. We've built our own local solution and we've South Africanized it. One of the things we've done is it's all manufactured locally rather than importing it, as many people do, and that enables us to do it a lot cheaper. And our solution is also battery based, so we're not reliant on the external electricity grid. It's much easier to place them in certain locations where they don't have to be prepared. We don't need a slab, for example, to put them on, and we don't need the external electricity. So I think it's just a matter of time and for it to evolve. And you know, speaking to some experts internationally, the sort of conventional wisdom, although obviously South Africa does have its own nuances, they say you need about one locker for every 6,000 person in the country, so per population. So in South Africa, if you said we had 60 million population, we'd be looking at needing to place something like 10,000 lockers nationwide to cover the country. And then you get the economies of scale, and that's what it's all about. It's about consolidation of shipments and scale. And then we're able to offer it cost effectively. But of course, that requires quite a bit of investment to get to that point. And we're excited for it, but, or maybe on the one hand, a bit foolish, because it does take quite a lot of investment up front. And we're still very early in that journey. We're approaching now 100 lockers around the country. So we've still got a long way to go. But I think we'll get there.
And from what you can see, maybe you could talk to us about the economics of the lockers. You said that, you know, one for every 6,000 in the population, and there's probably need for up to 10,000 in a country like South Africa. Maybe you could talk to us because around the economics of, let's say, a locker system, like what are we looking at? Is it renting off the space? Is it the manufacture of the boxes? Is it distribution of actually getting, you know, drivers or, you know, little motorcycles to go to deliver at the boxes? Like, what are we actually looking at if you were to give us a view, sort of to peer behind the curtains?
Yeah, sure. So those kind of everything of the above, you kind of hit on all the pertinent points there. But to break it down a little bit, so we're able to produce a 19-compartment locker locally for about 30,000 rand in total, landed, with all the electronics, the locks, the steel, the metal, painted, everything in place. And then, yes, we need to either pay a partner a per parcel revenue share, which can range between, you know, anything from around, say, 2 rand per parcel that gets delivered to the locker to the location partner, or in some cases we'll pay a fixed fee to them. And then, so that gives you kind of the network, but then, as you alluded to, you need to get the parcels to move from A to B. And to do that, you need the whole logistics network. And the way we're tackling that from a financial point of view and to make it more viable is we're making our network, and we're able to do this. There are challenges, especially from a technical point of view, to do this, what we call courier agnostic. So rather than us just having the network and we control everything, or the movement of the parcels, if you think about one of the use cases is to have these lockers at a residential estate, for example. So rather than having many couriers having to put, you know, multiple, their own locker at each entrance to a residential estate, for example, we can put our lockers there and have a number of different courier companies tap into this courier agnostic network and make use of the asset from that point of view. So that's, I would say, two main ways in which we're able to hopefully make it work once we get to the volume that we need. That's the first one being manufacturing it locally, cost effectively, and secondly, making it courier agnostic so we can drive the volumes by opening it up to many different couriers out there rather than just trying to fulfill everything ourselves, for example.
Okay, I think that that makes sense when you describe it, in a way like that. So just maybe we can switch gears a little bit. When you see e-commerce adoption in South Africa, and I like the fact that we're talking to someone who has been in the game for a while, right? One of the issues I have with how we define e-commerce in the country is I sometimes feel like there's a conflation of e-commerce between e-commerce and online retail. We're often quoting online retail, right, to say that, let's say, retail is a 1.2, 1.3 trillion rand market, and of that, you know, the online part is about 4 or 5%. Right. And I sometimes think that many people think that that's all that there is to e-commerce in the country, that it's just the online retail part. Like people seem to conflate, you know, those two things.
Yeah. So I assume you're referring to the broader scope of e-commerce, which would include large other industries such as for travel and for, there's just online trading of some sort where you're paying online. I mean, even for example, if you ship something, for example, you're not buying something online, but you're transacting through e-commerce to make it happen. So yes, I would agree with you that that's much larger, and certainly have been exposed to that through the different payment businesses I've been involved with, where you can actually see where, you know, physical goods are involved, which is maybe the pure sort of online retail part you're referring to, is only a small subset of what's actually going on out there that's taking place from a broader trade point of view. So, and you can see that with the payments, and that's something I'm very passionate about. I think the even bigger opportunity we have actually resides in payments. And if you look in South Africa, something like 9 out of 10 transactions that take place from a cash point of view is still, and there's research out there that shows that if you can remove cash from society, you actually grow GDP by a few percentage points. And so I think it's very important to focus on that. And so one of the things that's happening that has been driven by Reserve Bank and Bankserv in South Africa is a new payment method called PayShap, which is rapid payments, which I'm super excited about. And I think it's only going to help grow that sort of broader e-commerce in the country as we get people to transact electronically, per se. Yeah. So, yeah, I agree. It's important to bring that into the spotlight as well.
No, nice. And I'm sure that you and I could probably have an entire separate conversation just on the payments piece, of this. But maybe just to drill down a little bit for yourselves as Bob Group, what's some of the action, that we're seeing on the ground? I think we've spoken quite a bit about some of the things that have helped to push up people's exposure to e-commerce. You know, obviously we are talking specifically about online retail, some of the foundational pieces that have had to be put in, the connectivity, distribution, talking now about last mile delivery. We've spent quite a bit of time on that, but from what you can see, you know, what are some of the call outs that you might have based on what you are seeing on your platform?
I think it would be a myth not to talk about the Chinese retailers selling into South Africa. We're definitely seeing a big surge in that. And from our platform, so our strength historically has been around the logistics side. And we saw, for example, in July, over 40% increase in the number of shipments being shipped through our platform. So that's probably growing faster than e-commerce overall, I would say, well, online retail at least. And so I think to your point, I think what we're seeing is people are becoming more comfortable, and COVID definitely played a role in this, to just conducting business using electronic means, right? Using online tools, using websites. So whereas before someone might have, for example, physically gone into a retail place to ship something, now I think people have become a lot more comfortable to use the tools that are available online to do it. And so I think to your original points, while that might not be seen as traditional, specifically online retail, it's sort of becomes a bit sort of, everything becomes sort of blended together. And I think that also speaks to what we're seeing a big growth area also is what we would call social commerce, right? So someone might sell something over WhatsApp or through Instagram or through some other channel, and it's still humans maybe interacting with each other who, and it's not maybe what we traditionally would have called online retail, but there's certainly digital elements and there's a bit of a mix that takes place and the lines become a little bit blurred, I think. So, and I think definitely we're going to see even more of that grow. It's not going to be what we traditionally thought, where you go through a very structured checkout process and, you know, it follows this more traditional retail means. There's this whole other world out there where people are trading in neighborhood groups, WhatsApp groups, through various social media platforms. And I just think that's going to become even more and more blurred as time goes on.
One of the things that when I was reading and just reading up in preparation for this session, you had written something which I found very interesting about the fact that in certain instances, it's not that online retail grows the retail pie per se, but that you have almost a substitution thing that's going on, where instead of going to buy my clothes physically from the shop, I just go online and order the clothes and get delivered to my house. So I wanted to check if I was understanding that point correctly, you know, to say, is that the view, you know, to say that the online aspect isn't necessarily growing the retail, you know, pie, but that we're almost substituting one thing for another in terms of, I guess, what a person would normally spend their money on. They're still spending the same amount of money, but it's just on it's just in a different channel.
Yeah, I think that is correct. I think you read that in the right way. I mean, where traditional retail would be growing lowish single digits, online retail would be growing double digits. And I think it is cannibalizing it to some extent. But I would also argue, you know, like I keep coming back to my passion project now, which is our smart parcel lockers. And what we do there is we've put most of our lockers currently actually sit inside shopping malls. So what you're seeing is also a little bit of the reverse effect. And I think this is shopping mall owners are realizing this, is we can use mechanisms like that to actually get foot traffic back into the shopping malls as well. So someone might order something online because of the price factor, or maybe it's a choice from a variety point of view because of the long tail that's available online. They might not be able to get it at their local shopping mall. But then we can still get that person to come back into the shopping mall to collect that and perhaps cross-sell or upsell something else in the physical world. So again, it's that these two worlds, I think, less and less can we treat them as these two very distinct different things. They sort of morphing into a lot of crossover between the two.
All right. Makes sense. And I guess maybe a little bit of an extension to that is I like the fact that you talk about the malls, you know, to say that's where you guys have decided to put your lockers, because we see them, you know, in service stations, we've seen them in malls, And I wanted to check for you what you see as what's working. Obviously, for you guys, it's the malls, but especially in the more outlying areas, does it tend to be, you know, those shopping center type of applications, or are there other types of maybe gathering points that you guys have decided to use as well?
Sure. So we are, like I said, still early in our journey with this, but I think for me, the answer really is we need to go where it's convenient for the customer. In Europe, they've termed this, come up with this term called slipper distance, where I'm not sure if we'll quite get there in South Africa, but the idea behind it is that the majority of the population can go and fetch their parcel in their slippers. So it's like walking distance from their home to go and pick it up. And so for us, I think we have to make it convenient for the person. And so that means it's across, you know, in the major centers, it will be office parks, shopping malls. The same as you go further in outlying areas, it will also be those, but also things like forecourts of petrol stations. So where someone is passing through, you know, if someone's living, for example, out on a farm, for example, they might go into town once a week. And it just needs to be, we need to have those lockers at locations that are convenient for them to collect, that sort of on their routes or on their sort of daily or weekly run as it's relevant to them. So it's really, yeah, I mean, if we're going to have 10,000 lockers, we're going to be in a lot of different places.
And when it comes to actually getting the goods to the lockers, I noted that you guys obviously have a logistics piece, to the Bob business. Have you gone about investing in, let's say, your own motorcycles and your own delivery vans, that type of thing? Or have you gone the route that a number of other players have gone, which is the outsourcing? The outsourcing route. I think there are companies now that exist that never existed a few years ago, you know, simply just to take care of the logistics piece. You know, everyone knows Checker 6060, but, you know, not knowing that there's literally a separate company that's, you know, underpinning just the delivery piece there.
Yeah, so we see ourselves more as a technology company. We really enjoy and thrive on building the tech and the software, and in this case, we've gone further than that, built the hardware for the lockers, and it's not our intention to build that, you know, to own the trucks and the warehouses to fulfill that logistics component. So we're definitely partnering with a number of different companies, again, based on our courier agnostic model. The idea is that multiple couriers will be able to tap into the network that we create. So it's more like us providing the railway tracks for this solution, and then allowing other companies to come with their trains and to make use of this network, this infrastructure that we've created. And there will be multiple of those companies to fulfill our goal of this career agnostic network. So yes, we do have some vehicles of our own, but that's definitely not how we plan to scale it. Thankfully, no hijackings or anything like that just yet, but there are definitely other companies we believe that are much better at dealing with those sort of operational issues than we are.
This logistics piece, it's obviously quite an important one. Given everything that you've said, it's something that you guys are focusing quite a bit on. And I remember back in the day reading about the fact that one of the reasons why Amazon had largely stayed away from not only South Africa, but just the African continent as a whole, was that the logistics piece was too much of a headache, to solve for them, especially given the informality of a lot of African cities and, you know, addressing and, you know, all of these issues. And, you know, one of your competitors has, you know, been sounding the trumpet for a couple of years that they have the best logistics network, and that would help to fend off that international competition. But my question was, you know, to say right now, from what you can see, because you've got your foot in the logistics piece on the software side, obviously, in terms of fulfilling your own orders, and then now you've got the lockers and that type of thing. What are some of the things that you still think could be, you know, solved for, you know, Is it addressing, you know, is it connectivity? Is it just simply having little bikes that can go into places where no one else dares to? Is it distribution? Like, in your view, what is it?
Look, I think there's still room for improvement in a lot of areas. We spoke a bit about payments. I think it's probably not being a complete blocker to stop people from trading online, but I think it can still be a lot better and become more ubiquitous amongst the general population. But I think if there was one thing, and you talk about, you know, Amazon and I think Takealot have solved this to some degree, but which would be different to markets like Amazon would be used to operating in, is, for example, servicing townships where currently you pay a surcharge to have a delivery made through a private courier company in a township. Where I think if we can solve for that, so I think again lockers can play a part in that. Perhaps something like taxi ranks. You could do a partnership where people are traversing through on a daily basis. If as they do that, they can collect their parcels on their way home. I think, and if we can do it in a cost-effective way, which I believe is possible to do through the locker network, I think that can have a big impact locally. And I think, yeah, so for someone like an Amazon who comes in and perhaps wants to offer, you know, their prime delivery solution, I think that type of situation is going to present a challenge for them. I'm sure they will find a way to work around it, but I imagine it will take some time to get to a solution. So, yeah, I think to reiterate what I said before, is the logistics components is still the part that is up for improvement in South Africa and that could have the biggest impact.
No, most certainly, and I definitely, you know, would agree with your assessment, you know, from that point of view. As we land the conversation then, Andy, it's two things on our side. First is when it comes to, you guys have a number of components, you know, to your business, which was once Bidobuy and is now evolved. There's a payments piece, a logistics piece, but for the shop itself, I believe it's called Bob Shop. Who's your customer? who's typically using, you know, your service? And is that something that has been static, or has it evolved over time?
Look, that has been, I would say, the most challenging part of our business, given, I think, largely a lot of the competition on the one hand. But on the other hand, I think it has also helped grow the market in that we're not competing directly against the likes of a Takealot and Amazon and a Makro. They all have, as I mentioned before, the very structured catalog. They have typically, although there's a bit of a hybrid, a more centralized logistics solution. Whereas Bob Shop, having originated from Bidobuy, we still have the auction component. We have the less structured catalog. So we have people who can sell secondhand goods, for example, refurbished goods. So there's a lot of trade going on. It's also around collectibles, antiques, even like secondhand phones. So there's a lot of there's differences from that point of view. And so I feel we are benefiting from that sort of increased groundswell, also that's coming from the Chinese retailers, that people are getting more comfortable buying online. And fortunately for us, we're not directly in the crosshairs of the big competitors, of the big international players that are coming. We are still very much proudly South African, locals, lacquer at heart. And we are seeing modest growth at the moment. We, of course, would like to see more. I'm talking specifically now on our marketplace. But where we're seeing much bigger growth is on all the other parts of our business, which you alluded to, being the payments and the logistics services that we offer, and now one of our newest services, the Smart Parcel Locker service. So we also are more about providing sort of underlying infrastructure. So as the market grows, e-commerce market grows, we're fortunate to see the benefit of that, and we're not solely dependent on our marketplace alone.
Probably a good place to be in, where you're not competing against businesses that seem to have, bottomless pockets.
Exactly.
Right now. And maybe that's where we can end off then, Andy, is around that evolution from Bidobai, to Bob. I always am quite enthralled when people have a rebranding or repositioning, because there tends to be so much, for myself, there's so much brand cachet, in the original brand. I think Bidobai, for example, is something that had sort of become synonymous with the world of trading online. And maybe where we end off is you just walking us through some of that rationale, and in hindsight, how do you feel about having made that particular decision?
I think you're right. It takes a brave person to take something with that sort of legacy and to change it. It was mostly driven by us wanting to create, offer a sort of more holistic e-commerce offering across the entire e-commerce value chain to our users. And as it's turned out over the years, the marketplace has formed a smaller part of our overall offering. I do have times, I have to admit, where I do question whether it was the right thing to do. And there have definitely been pros and cons to it. But, you can't really look back. We made the choice. We've got to move forward. And I genuinely believe that we definitely have work to do on building that brand and making ourselves aware out, to the public out there. And I really do believe that as we can, as the other newer services that we're offering specifically around payments, Bob Pay and lockers, Bob Box, I believe that we're going to become much better known in the eyes of users. And I think that the idea is and the intention is for that to have a sort of a ripple effect across all those five different services that we offer. So yeah, we're a 25-year-old company, but I still feel we're still very early actually in our evolution, and we've still got a long way to go. So I think you're going to start seeing a lot more of us out there.
And on that, we come to the end of today's conversation. It has been a great one, just understanding what's going on in the world of e-commerce. Often we find ourselves talking to people that have been, in traditional retail and have now, started an e-commerce component to their business, or, some of the more recent startup businesses that, have entered full on. But it's always great, having a company that has that has a 25-year history and can give, a view, of a time when once upon a time people had to, pay for the internet by the minute, which I still think is such a wild, wild concept, but it made sense, all those years ago, just telling us about the evolution and some of the things that have happened along the way. A huge part of the conversation was spent just talking about logistics and how important that is, to increasing adoption in a country like South Africa, where you have a huge population that is in town, cities and metros that are well serviced, but, making sure that people in outlying areas are well taken care of, just as a way to make sure that you have, more or less equal coverage across the country. And smart lockers and that type of thing, those types of distribution methods is what we spend a long time on, because this is something that Bob Group is investing in. Very interesting stat that Andy gave us is that by some of the estimates, obviously these are global estimates, so they're used as a guideline, that you need maybe one locker for every 6,000 people in a population. And, that helps us to get to the slipper distance. That's another metric I learned about today, getting to a point where you should be able to go out and get something that's been delivered to you, and it should be within, a distance that's short enough that you can walk there, in your slippers. And that the estimate is that 10,000 lockers would be great for a country like South Africa. 100 lockers in the stable for Bob. And, you know, Andy just saying that they are well on their way, but, you know, still have, you know, quite a bit to go before they can make all of that happen. Also talking quite a bit about the importance of payments and how that has helped, you know, to increase adoption. And then also, you know, great to hear some of the rationale that led us from being called Bidobai until now, where it is the Bob Group. And one of the key insights is that, you know, the marketplace part of the business has, it's still an important piece of the business, but they are currently seeing, you know, more growth, you know, especially from the logistics and payments parts of their businesses, where, you know, a big part of their business is currently landing. So that's been it. We have been in conversation with the managing director of Bob Group, that is Andy Higgins. Andy, thank you so much for being with us today.
Awesome. Thank you so much for having me.
And that's been it for this edition of the Business Day Spotlight. Remember that you can find our latest podcasts on Business Live. That's under the podcast Business Day Spotlight tab on Twitter with hashtag BD Spotlight. And remember that you can review and subscribe for free on iono.fm, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Pocket Casts, or wherever you choose to get your pods casted. I've been Mudiwa Gavaza of the Business Day and Financial Mail. And this has been another edition of the Business Day Spotlight, which is a multimedia live production. So from myself and the rest of the team, it is good evening, good afternoon, and good morning.